Hello, everyone. My name is Alan Matthews. I'm the Rebecca Q. and James C. Morgan Dean of the College of Human Ecology, and it's my great pleasure to welcome you to the 2014 lecture of the Iskol Family Program for Leadership Development in Public Service. I want to really thank all the staff and the students. Patty Thayer's here. Patty, where are you? She's still here? Patty, for helping organize this event. It really is, it takes a great team to pull this off, so really thank you. And for all the students who participated in the day talking about their summer internship experiences, it was very meaningful to us. And I'm really pleased that it's wonderful that Jill and Ken Iskol have endowed this program, but it's really special that they take their very valuable time and join us when we have this annual event. So I would like to recognize, and Jill and Ken, if you can please stand so we can give you a round of applause. Now, when Jill and Ken established this program, it was actually 13 years ago. Time really does fly. In order to inspire students to become ambassadors of social change, they truly demonstrated, as they set this up with that goal, the power of what their engagement has done. And as we just came from a dinner where the students talked about their experiences, because not only do they host this lecture, but they also host students to spend their summer in engaged learning. And it really, when you go to this dinner and hear what they've done and what their experiences are, they are changing lives. And to be able to see that, witness it as a dean, it gives me great, great pleasure. And it was really interesting this year because this afternoon, or this morning, we had an amazing announcement, Cornell did. So for those of you who aren't on the web, Cornell today announced a new program in engaged learning called Engage Cornell. It's a special university-wide program announced today with that spurred from a gift of $50 million to support engaged learning, and with the expectation that Cornell raise an additional $100 million over the next 10 years to support this type of learning. And donors don't give $50 million to organizations when they don't see existing strength in an area and want to leverage it and make it happen. So I really directly see the role that Jill and Ken played when they came up with this vision 13 years ago. This is really what it's about, and what we really are trying to do with this new gift is to take what's working so well in this program and make it deeper, making it more expansive, so that the goal is that every student who graduates Cornell will have an experience like the students that are in this room. So Jill and Ken, I really want to thank you again, because I think it was your insights that really helped set the stage for Cornell being in a position to get a gift of this magnitude. And that's really, really amazing. So again, thank you very much. Now I have a pin here. It's behind my name tag. It says 150. This year, Cornell is turning 150 years old. It's referred to as our sesquicentennial. And you say that long enough, you actually can say it without having to hesitate. And as the excitement builds, as we anticipate Charter Day, which is April 27th, 2015, the actual signing that established Cornell, each college is doing its own program to celebrate the rich legacy of the college and Cornell more broadly. So what we're trying to do in human ecology is recognize all the special things we do and put special attention on it as we participate in the sesquicentennial. And this is one of our events that we're very proud, that reflects the history of our philosophy of our mission, which is, and we came up with a new mission statement a couple of years ago, so I say it every possible way, every possible time, and it's to improve lives by exploring and shaping human connections to natural, social, and built environments. And this type of program this type of focus on students engaging with the world so represents that mission. It gives me great pleasure to be part of this 150th birthday party for Cornell. And ironically, it's also Martha Van Rensselaer's 150th birthday this year. So it all comes together. It's all wonderful. So as I mentioned, this program not only supports the lecture, but student internships. And we are now, cumulatively, at 99 students have been supported over the years with their support, ranging from students placed all over New York State, in Brooklyn, Tanzania, Zambia, Dominican Republic, really all over the world, all over the United States, all over New York State. It's just been an amazing thing. And next year we break into the hundreds, and it'll be really, really wonderful. So again, thanks. So at this time, I want to now introduce John Eckenrode. John Eckenrode is really the leader and the implementer of this program. John met Jill many years ago at a conference, and that discussion led to why we're here today. John is the director of the Bronfenbrenner Center for Translational Research. What we try to do at that center is to take the social science research we do in the college and make it meaningful to people throughout the world. The bench to bedside model you hear about in medical schools, we're trying to do that broadly in social sciences. And John helped establish the BCTR in honor of Uri Bronfenbrenner, and he has been masterful at getting that center up and operational and masterful at implementing the ISCL program. So without further ado, I hand you John Eckenrode, who will introduce our speaker.
Well, thanks, Alan, and welcome, everyone, tonight. It's really an honor to introduce our speaker tonight, as it always is. And I really want to thank you for coming. And it's great that we could have this event in this nice venue. I really want to thank the Statler staff who made this happen. There was something in here earlier. They had to move out completely to make this happen, so I thank them. Of course, I want to add my thanks to Ken and Jill ISCL for endowing the program. It's really through their vision that this program is possible, and it's a real treat that they can be here tonight. Now, the inspiration for this evening's program came from a project initiated by Jill ISCL that resulted in a book called Hearts on Fire. And this book tells the story of 14 visionary leaders who each in their own way are innovators and entrepreneurs in making the world a more just and humane place for all people to live. This includes our speaker tonight, Maria Pacheco. This book has launched a series of other products and efforts, and I would urge you all to get online and search for Hearts on Fire, and you'll find some wonderful things, and there's more to come, as Jill was telling me. So, Jill, I'm going to ask you maybe after Maria's talk if you'd come up and ask the first question, if you would be willing to do that, just to kick off the questioning. And you might have a reflection or two if you have after Maria's talk. Well, let me just say a few words of introduction about our special speaker this evening, Maria Pacheco. I could say a lot more. You have her bio is in your program, so please read that. And I want to give her the stage as soon as possible, so I won't go on too long. But let me just say a few things. Maria's an extraordinary person as we get to know her more. She becomes even more extraordinary to me. She's like a growing number of young social entrepreneurs who, using her intelligence, passion, and commitment to help solve the daunting problems of world poverty. And she approaches this not by a top-down approach in terms of distribution of resources to those in need, which is often called for when there's a tragedy strikes, as it happened in Haiti, for example. But she works rather by building more sustained bottom-up approaches that enable poor people to make a living on their own by being part of the global economy. And to do that while not exploiting or dehumanizing people or putting their health at risk or by degrading the environment. This is the story of Wakami Village Partners, which Maria founded and is the CEO. It's quite a story and one we are glad to bring to this audience. Maria was born in Guatemala City, and she moved to the U.S. with her parents at the age of 12. and returned home at 16. And after completing her undergraduate studies in Guatemala, she enrolled in a graduate program here in CALS and got her master's degree in biological agriculture in 1990. So, and she, this is her first trip back, I believe, to campus since she got her degree. She's been, as you'll hear, she's been very busy. She didn't have a lot of time to come back to campus. Her advisor is, one of her advisors is in the audience, so thank you for coming tonight. She, Maria returned to Guatemala determined to address the famine that was chronic in her country, starting an organic gardening program. And in 2004, she founded a business to connect rural villages with local markets. And this experience convinced her of the need to expand to international markets, but also that true progress toward breaking the cycle of poverty would require economic improvement along with environmental sustainability. This led to Wakami, which she founded with her cousin in 2006. I will let her tell the rest of the story, of this inspiring story of what products Wakami distributes, the producers of those products, and what it means for the lives and communities in Guatemala. Maria's work and influence has now reached well beyond Guatemala. She has received a Global Leadership Award from Vital Voices, which is the preeminent NGO that identifies and trains women leaders from around the world. She's a Fulbright scholar and is also a consultant to the UN Foundation. She is now a regular invitee to international conferences, so we're actually very fortunate that she could take time out of her busy travel schedule to be with us here tonight. So without further delay, please welcome Maria back to Cornell.
It's such a pleasure to be back here and be able to be with you today. So today I want to tell you a little bit about Wakami, a value chain that really starts in remote villages of Guatemala with people's dreams. Before I do that, I really want to thank Ken and Jill for this, being back here, but Jill has also been part of us in many other events, really backing us up. So I'm really thankful for that and for being able to come back here. For Patricia and the team that made this possible, and also to Elson, who was my advisor when I was at Cornell, very patient with me, so I'm thankful for that. Tell you a little bit about Guatemala. Guatemala, it's a country with a lot of potential, rich mine heritage, diversity of ecosystems, and when it's rated for the happiest people in the world, we're number 9. That's amazing. Especially when you contrast that with the indicators of Guatemala. And I think that the one that tells the whole story is that 49% of children suffer chronic malnutrition. That means that the potential of the country is lost by the time the population is 2 years of age. In the villages we work, it's 85%. And I think we don't need more indicators to show how this is really not working. We also have the highest feminicide rate in the world, the highest gender gap index in Latin America. And it's a country that has a lot of corruption, and now with the narco-traffic and the human trafficking, it's really become quite hard. And I think when you see so much poverty and also see what's happening to women, it's easily explainable. Women are not empowered and families cannot thrive. So these indicators are very tough. And you know, when I was preparing to come to Cornell, I keep asking myself, why stay in a country like Guatemala? And if we stay, you know, is it possible to change this reality? And how do we change it? So those are the questions that we've been addressing. And for me, I'm excited to be here at Cornell, like everybody was saying today, because, you know, young people have new ideas, new ways of looking at things. So today, I'm really looking forward to new ideas, feedback, and like when you were saying, when people connect, amazing things happen. So also to share stories with you and see where they take us. For me, when I came to Cornell, I was coming from a country that was going through a 36-year internal war, where a million people fled the country and 200,000 people were killed. And right before coming to Cornell, I was working in refugee camps, and my job was to take little babies from their mothers from the refugee camp to the nearby hospital, the ones that were sick. And for me, one experience that really changed my life was when we were going to the hospital and one of the children died, and it was my job to wrap the baby up, give it to his mother. The mother would walk down to the village with a dead child, and we had to try to save the others. And for me at 20, 22 years old, I didn't want to be part of that society. I didn't want to be Guatemalan. I felt shame for what was happening, for the most precious treasures of our country were being lost to war and to poverty because there was not a $2 IV solution for the children at the refugee camp. So that really, when I came to Cornell, I was struggling with all of this. But also, right before coming to Cornell, one day I was writing my biology thesis, and I could really envision a world that I would love to live in. And that's what it said. It said, I dream of a world in which the sound of the wind against the trees, the songs of birds from their nests, the jump of a lizard from one twig to another, the footsteps of a deer in the soil, the breeze of the spring in the home, and peace between brother and sisters be everyday events. So just before coming to Cornell, I could envision that. And now that I look back, I think for me, the war and the rule of women was where my heart was at. But the dream became the destination. And for me, I think that the dream saved me from just feeling so bitter and so out of place. And I really am thankful to Elson, because I was coming to Cornell, you see so much and you're overwhelmed. And then you look at your country and you see what's happening and it's hard. But I think two things I took from Cornell. One is everybody here was fighting for a dream. So that's what gave my dream life. But also I realized you cannot choose where you're born, but what you can choose is who you work for. And that started giving me a little bit of peace of mind. And what I love about dreams is that it's the energy of creativity. We meet the perfect people. I graduated from Cornell. I decided I couldn't change the world, but I could create my own world. So I went back, started an organic farm, and I would train communities to produce organic vegetables and things. And this is Patricio, one of the people from where the war was really, really bad. And he said, Maria, you know, I also have a dream. We can't do vegetables because we're so remote in this, but we really want to plant trees. We want to promote sustainable systems. And I said, well, my dream has trees in it, so let's start working. So he had 10 friends, and we started working with a forestry project. And Patricio really said, you know, after the war, we really have nothing, and we really want to create value chains where we value ecosystems, where water can return to the communities, to the land, and we also have a source of income. So we started a project called the Sakala Bunny, and we made the story of how happy bunnies or animals were going to be in this new forest. The kids in the community started to work as well. And with the 10 farmers, I think the first year we planted 2,000 trees, and the trees started to grow and started to grow. We were finally able to start a sustainable harvest. For us, this was like our whole industry, but it was really a very simple machine with this. We started harvesting the trees, and this was our first carpentry. In the village, there was no electricity, so our first carpentry was under an avocado tree, a bench, and just doing everything manual. And then we were able, even with that, to win a World Bank Rural Business Award, and the community finally got electricity. So we were able to start with the machinery and more people and people working, and finally made it to the market. So for us, you know, this wooden tea was not just, you know, a product. It was something that had behind the dreams of many people. And I didn't know, as a biologist, didn't know anything about markets. So I partnered with a friend that would, you know, do the development of the products and the labeling and stuff like that. And we were able to really make it to market. And for me, this first experience, it was in the remote villages of Guatemala. But what I loved that was that many of us were inside a shared dream. And in this community, it's usually forestry, it's men that do it, but there were so many widows from the war, so the women said, you know, we also want to get involved. And you know, now it's been 12 years, so we have 12 communities, 500 farmers, 10 carpenters, 20 weavers, and more than, I think now, 1 million square feet of wood to harvest. And for me, I started really realizing, you know, we started small, but it was many of us working together and creating change. Even the government here got involved in starting to give incentives to these rural villages that even though they had no title of land, they were starting to get paid for planting trees. So I was really happy when in 2002 there was this newspaper for the first time ever in Guatemala. There had been a lot of poverty, but never a famine declared in the country. And for me, the woman that touched my heart was Juanita. She was a 12-year-old girl that was undernourished and was already a mother. And this was in the newspaper Monday. And Wednesday, Juanita had died. And so for me, it took me again to this place of how can this happen in a land where avocados fall off trees? And what are we doing wrong and what can we do? And I just felt like what I felt during the war, except this time it wasn't a war, it was just poverty. Some friends asked me, you know, Marielle, why don't you go there and you see what you can do with what you've done in the villages? I said, I cannot see more pain. If I can't do anything about it, I don't want to see it. But they convinced me, and I was able to make it there. I visited the villages. It was agriculture in a very dry ecosystem, corn and beans. Coffee crisis, so there was no job in the coffee plantations. And women were earning $5 a month. That was the reality of this village. And when I went there, a woman invited me into her house, and I saw a child like this, and I said, her name was Doña Santa, and I said, you know, Doña Santa, if you don't take this child to the hospital, he's gonna be dead like Juanita. And she said, you know, Maria, I have $5 in my pocket. With those, I can try to save him or try to feed the other children for the rest of the month. And so for me, you know, that's one thing is to talk about poverty, and the other one is to see mothers having to choose which of their children they're going to give a bigger chance to. But we're not here to talk about sad stories. So what did Doña Santa want? I asked her, you know, what can we do? And by this time, the whole Guatemalan private sector and everybody bringing food and stuff. And Doña Santa said one thing that really transformed what we do. And she said, you know, Maria, if you can sell what we produce, the rest we can manage to do on our own. And that became, okay, so, you know, trees is gonna take a long time here. It's very dry ecosystem. So I said, what can you do, you know? And she and her community were really great weavers because it's a dry ecosystem, there was a lot of fibers and there was great leadership in the village. And there was great, these are like palm leaves. So we decided, this was like in October, so we decided, okay, it's Christmas, it's easy to sell baskets. We made this Christmas campaign. Again, I had no idea how to do it, so a friend of mine was a photographer, and I told him, I'm gonna hire you to take pictures, to make the brochures, and to help me sell the baskets. And for us, it was, we had this goal of selling 3,000 baskets. At the end of the month, we sold 4,000 baskets. That meant 100 families had $100 that month. And for us, it was like, the people were really happy, but try selling Christmas baskets in January. It was very hard again. So we had all of the baskets that were over hanging. And once again, the dreams and serendipity bringing the right people, I met the owner of a rum company in Guatemala that is distributed worldwide. And I told him, you know, Andres, our communities could make this packaging for you. And he was saying, no, I don't think so. They're not reliable. We're gonna bring it from Brazil. And I said, just give us a chance. Give us a chance. 6 months later, we get the first order for 2,000 units. And I go to the village and was really excited, told the women, you guys wanted markets? Well, here they are. And it was 30 women that could make the packaging. But by the time they had, you know, triple or were earning $50 each, they stopped working. I said, you know, we're happy, we have money now. I said, yeah, but the client's not happy. And Andres calls me and say, Maria, either you get me the 2,000 units or, you know, the business is lost. And that's when we really realized that to link communities to markets, you need a structure that will tell the business and the company, don't worry about it, you're gonna get the quality, the quantities on time. And tell the women, you wanted this, now we gotta work and structure it. And that's how we started really becoming a business incubator. It's been 12 years now, and I love this picture because you saw the pictures initially in the newspaper. And now they have their own company. It's 300 women from six communities. They're doing 100 units a month. And Diageo, the company that distributes Johnny Walker in the world, bought half of the brand. So what started as 2,000 units a month, now it's 100,000 units a month. And so it's sales of more than almost $1 million a year for the last 8 years. So when you see the power of the market, and in this structure, because it's mostly labor, it's 80% of the cost goes directly to the women. So when I saw this, I was really, really fascinated. This is Doña Santa, the woman that I first met. And when she started making the product, 9 out of 10 were bad. And imagine rejecting that production. And she says when she got rejected, because it was all bad, for a moment, she felt like giving up, but she said, if I give up, I know what life awaits. But if I try, maybe there's something different for me. So she now is the best producer. And she was the best producer. And I kept saying, you know, Doña Santa, your dress is really old. Well, you know, everybody now has new dresses in the village. And I said, wait, Maria, wait. One day she calls me up and says, you got to come see what I have. And so she was sending her children to school. And she bought a cow. And then she bought another cow. And then she bought land. And then one day she says, Maria, everybody's coming to the village to see my cows, but can I sell them? You know, it's like, of course, Doña Santa. So really with this experience, we realized the power of markets, especially when they go into women's hands. The women at the beginning, you know, would go with a pickup truck up the mountain with $5,000, $10,000. By the time it was $20,000, I said, guys, you know, how are we gonna make sure that, you know, nothing happens to this money? And we really had to start paying by checks, by banks. And the women had never gone to a bank. So the whole idea of reading and writing, being able to go to the bank, and them saying, you know, if now we can make money, means maybe we can learn to read and write, and maybe we can learn to do this. And we were really fascinated by the women. In this village, the school, average school years was 2 or 3 years. And that 4 years ago, this was the first ever high school graduating class from this village. Once the women had income, they went to the local authorities and said, we need a junior high school, we need a high school. And this was the first graduating class ever. So for me, it really showcased how in these extreme communities, give women an opportunity, the change is immediate in the next generation. And this is Doña Santa. Finally, she got a new dress. But really, to see this and to see them laughing, for me, I was really, really excited. And that's why I didn't come to Cornell. I was up there in the villages working. And you know, when you work in very local, you expect local change. But there's things I never imagined. When the experience with the rum company was so successful, the First Lady of Guatemala came to me and said, what you did in that village, we have 4,000 like it. What can you do? And I said, I mean, I was working with one village, hardly had my company started. But that's when miracles happened. And I got this invitation that said, invitation from the State Department to participate in a Fortune State Department International Women Leaders Mentorship Program. I'm like, what is this? And I thought, you know, it required for me to be a month here in New York and in Washington. I said, I can't do it. And then Dres, the same friend from the Rome company, said, Maria, do you think you're ever going to get another opportunity like this? You go. So here I was just understanding a few words of what this meant. And then I was also invited by the Aspen Institute to participate in a fellowship program. And those two happened together. And I didn't really know what to expect, except when I made it to the hotel in DC, I saw this. And I said, you know, I too have a dream. And this is the first very good sign that this is going to be an amazing program for me. And so I took that picture. And I remember the first time it was 18 women from the world with 14 women and women from the State Department. And for me, it was the first time I felt like, you know, this thing that I feel on my back, responsible for the women, I'm not alone anymore. For me, it was a gift to have women running Fortune companies to take the time, and Jill was part of those group of women really taking the time to hear us and to share with us what we wanted to do. And I just started crying, feeling like I'm not alone. And all my friends from the world were like, Maria, you don't cry in these events, you know. Well, it wasn't long before they were all crying too. So. Because it's really, I think in the messages, one thing is to walk a journey on your own. But when you walk it with somebody else, the difference is huge. And I think that's what all this is about. My mentor, Kathy Calvin, so I went with her for 3 weeks. She had come from AOL Time Warner. And then when I was there, she was the vice president of the United Nations Foundation. Now she's the president of the United Nations Foundation. And she gave me my first international consultancy to do what we were doing in Guatemala in Mexico. So I'm so thankful to her being so busy and yet taking time with me. So I went back to Guatemala and was able to work with the First Lady and the Guatemalan government, and we designed a rural economic development program that was going to support 300 value chains. And it was a $60 million World Bank IDB, Inter-American Development Bank loan for the country. And for me, this just really showed how, you know, you can start small and you can be remote, but if you learn how to create change, that can be taken to different places. And this was something I never imagined. And then one day I was invited by the White House, And I see him and I say, what do I talk to him about? And my BlackBerry started all of a sudden getting 50 messages. And I'm like, what's this? And it was all the people from the village of Doña Santa saying, Maria, we have finally have internet in our school. You're the only email address that we have. Please, please answer so that we can learn how to open an email. And I'm like, and that's what I told him. I said, imagine a system where we can export products from the villages instead of exporting people. And what we really need are opportunities for trade. And so that's what I talked to him about. And then in 2007, I got the Vital Voices Global Leadership Award. And for me, the only thing I could think of was, you know, this dream that we have inside, this voice that we always say, oh, you know, when I do this, I'll listen to it. When I do this, it's really worth living for. The dream that we have, the treasure that we have, that's what life's worth living for. Only we can bring the treasure that we have for the world. So for me, it was a moment of saying, this that seems so intangible, the dream, it's making things happen. So for this first part, for me, small reflections were like, start small even if the dream is big. As long as you start something in that dream. And then for me, being an ecologist and more environmentalist, I learned that businesses that value ancestral cultures, that value the earth, and that bring new people into their value chains are really businesses that can transform the world, one community at a time. And also I learned, looking at the forestry and then the fiber industry, when income goes to women, the impact goes directly to the family and the village. So those were, you know, some of the lessons that I learned from this. So I don't know if somebody has a question on this first thing or move forward. So at this time I was a volunteer. I was organic farming, but I didn't really have anything. But it was taking now like 8 hours of my time to do this. So somebody was helping me, said, you know, Maria, Jocotan has a business. Sacala has a business, and you have nothing. And I'm like, I never thought I could start a business around this. But that's when I decided, 2004, I love this work, so I'm going to start a business around it. And something that started very small, now we're a group of 40 people and two organizations that work hand in hand. One is the NGO and the other one is the business. One trains and the other one creates the markets and generates the income. So now what I love is that something, you know, my dream is still the dream that I showed you at the beginning, but now this is a dream that we're all coming together around, and this is what moves our team now. And the dream that inspires us is that all communities have houses, and that all houses have a window, that from all windows a garden may be seen, and that in all gardens there is a ball, that all balls belong to boys and girls that go to school, and that all schools have PTAs with parents at work, that all those who work may reach the markets, and that it's them, markets, that multiply houses with windows, that in the new windows birds and trees are multiplied so that the sky may be blue and the sun bright for everyone. So this is now the dream that moves us. And Wakami is, like I say, a value chain. And really going back to, so it's so great to be in this school, because now we're also a group of organizations with a mission of uniting worlds. When we mix design with communities, businesses with communities, ecologists with it, you create new possibilities, you create new spaces where anything, including miracles, can happen. And we really believe in two things, in the power of dreams as the source of inspiration and the market forces as a source of sustained prosperity. And the Wakami value chain is pretty much like any value chain. You know, we look what the market wants, we design for it, we produce and we sell. But we're proud of the fact that I think there's three things that we love about our value chain. One is that the production is done by women like Doña Santa, that if they go through a training program, the inclusive business methodology, they can insert into prosperity chains instead of just being, you know, outside of the economies. We love Wakami. We decided we're not going to sell products. We're going to promote a lifestyle that inspires people to connect to themselves, to connect to others, and to connect to the earth. And that's what Wakami represents. And we also learned that it's not just enough to generate income, but to really, once women have income, to bring organizations to the communities that have products and services that the women can invest their income in to improve the nutrition, to improve the health, especially in villages where there's lack of government services, lack of everything. So those Sorry, those are the things that give our value chain. Right now we have 460 people, 90% women, in 19 different villages in Guatemala. And this is WACAMI, our slogan, I think represents what we all in this value chain are after, and it's design, create, enjoy, be your dream. That's what we want to inspire people of the world to do. So what is WACAMI is a Guatemalan brand of handcrafted accessories retailing to more than 20 countries in 4 continents. And each piece is crafted in villages of Guatemala. So we really think when people are connected to their dreams and are given an opportunity, they will rise to the occasion. And that's why we say that, and for us, really learning that it's through a business-driven model that you can create sustainable change. That's what we really are passionate about. People from markets connecting to these villages and being the front of the system that makes possibilities. And so our formula for change is very simple. Dreams plus opportunity equals change. Here you see the women being trained and then people from the world coming to the villages and together with the women and the communities and the men starting to rethink development and create new ways of living. WACAMI now is sold in 24 countries, being the newest one, Saudi Arabia, South Korea, Taiwan, Shanghai. Still, we're very small in those markets, but the dream is to grow them, and so now we're in this branding thing that becomes very, very important. The spirit of each bracelet, of the bracelet we have, is that they really tell stories of us, the people of the earth, so that we can reconnect to ourselves and to others. And just to give you an idea of one of the products, the Earth Bracelet is one of the ones that really represents the WACAMI spirit. And it tells the story of how the earth was created. So it says that the earth was created, but it was dark, so a sun was attached to it. But when the sun rested, it was dark again, so the moon and the stars were created, and water and air, and plants and animals, and boys and girls to take care of the earth. And the earth was almost happy, but felt there was one thing missing, one thing that would connect it to everything else that was created. And so then love was created, connecting everything. So these are the type of stories that we like to tell. This other one was designed with all the importers of WACAMI from the world, and it's called the All-One Bracelet. And it's really our differences make us unique, but our common origin makes us all one. So these are the type of products that we're making. And WACAMI, just for you to get an idea where it's sold. At the beginning, we say we want to be a fashion brand, and we don't want to, you know, if people really want to get into it, show what's happening in the villages. But all the importers, the first picture they wanted was the one of the villages. So they're telling us how to tell the story a little bit different. There's Doña Maria in the village. So these are the different places. And for us now, it's been a real effort to try to get the branding and try to get everybody in the world telling the same story. But this was just a dream, like 2008. So for us, the future too of WACAMI, we really want to become a lifestyle brand, not just sell bracelets, but other products. And we really want to sell all over the world and be seen as a responsible brand that continues to inspire people to seek the most out of life, and a brand that connects people. So now we're really going to start, besides bracelets and other products, having trips to Guatemala so people from the world can meet the villages and have a further connection. Our goal, 5,000 artisans, not just in Guatemala, but in different parts of the world. And really, we see entire villages being transformed by the income they generate. And really, once a woman who thought her life was worthless, who had no hope, comes, has a dream, starts being trained, has an income, starts transforming her home and her village, we really see them as becoming real agents of change in a country where women were thought to be useless. And they're really the solution to the main problems that we're facing. These rural women are tough. So for us to almost be finishing, the impact. What is it that we love most about? And it's this, is that WACAMI allows the dreams of women to come to life. And their dreams will be to have their kids go to school, to have healthy kids, and that their kids don't have to go through what they had to go through because they lacked that education. So these are, imagine these women can make these textiles, the bracelets are nothing. it's really amazing. So with the WACAMI Village Program and the income, we bring in businesses that can showcase the products. So, you know, sustainable development starts happening. Healthy homes with good stoves. instead of having open fire in the homes. Water filters are the contaminated water is the number one cause of children's death in Guatemala. So water filters, a $40 filter saves a life. Solar panels, so they have light. Rainwater collectors, organic food in every backyard. While children are underweight and height control, and school attendance is measured for both boys and girls. And the part that we're really loving now, and people from the world with similar dreams are coming together. Connecting further to create change. So just to finish, you know, for us at Wakame, I think it's been really hard to say, when you say, you know, we're empowering women, what does that mean? We're creating change, what does that mean? So I just want to share with you two short stories. This is Doña Maria. Her community, when she was growing up, her community had to flee from the military and the guerrillas. She was 15 years, their village, running away. And finally, the peace treaties were signed in 1996, and they were given land like 4 hours away from where she was. And, you know, Wakame comes, and we tell them, you know, what is your dream? What do you want to do? And she said, dream, you know, come into this room. And they had, like, all the pictures of the massacres and the dead and everything. But it's been 4 years since that first encounter, and Doña Maria told us, you know, right now we're dreaming again. I'm dreaming again. My dreams are coming to life. My community is dreaming again. But for us, it's very important to have an opportunity to share with the people of the world the pain we went through, because that will heal us. And together with the people of the world, we can start rebuilding our lives, rebuilding our communities. And it starts by acknowledging our story. So that's Doña Maria. She never went to school yet. She's a business leader. And Sandra is a woman who was, she's a single mother of two. And we got her when she only had sixth grade education. And with Wakame, she got herself and her two children through junior high school, through college. So she became now a teacher as well as a Wakame leader. She got a new house, and in her old house now runs the first junior high school of the village. So 6 years of opportunities, and then she's changing the entire village. For us, we decided to create special products called Wakame Connections, which really tell these stories and where you can really go to a site and learn more about this, because I think here's the essence of what a value chain can do. And just to say, it empowers women. It doesn't really tell the whole story, but when you see these women doing the things they do, we all become brave because they struggle through so much. We wanted for today the website to be up, the wakameconnections.com. It's going to be up in like 2 or 3 days, but really it's an invitation for you to come and see more behind this women's stories. And of course, wakame.net is the place where you can go to the different countries and be able to learn more about Wakame and buy online. But for us, really to finish, you know, at Wakame, we know that individual dreams are very strong, but that collective dreams are unstoppable. And that's why we travel, to make an invitation to people that want to share it with us. So. The wise stay in Guatemala, I think it's keeping our dreams alive. And really together seeing them come to life. And inputs into the way, I think being with Aspen, with Vital Voices, meeting people like you, I get inspired by US leaders. And there's three quotes here that for me really resounding, you know, what is important to change a country? And I love this one by Theodore Roosevelt. The stream will not permanently rise higher than the main source. And the main source of national power and national greatness is found in the average citizenship of a nation. So if we get these women empowered, if we get these women making decisions, if we get these women, and why do I talk about women? Just because women are left out of the whole equation. It's really, you know, we say in Guatemala that if you have a ship and only the men are, you know, sailing, it's going to go in circles. Once the women are also part of that, it's going to go in a straight line. And then Bobby Kennedy, some men see things as they are and say why. I dream of things that never were and say why not. And of course, I have a dream. That's where we stick to. And you see this country now. And it was just a dream a couple of years ago. So that's the presentation.
Just so everybody knows, Maria Well, we wrote the book. I wrote the book with a team. It was first published in, we self-published in 2011, but there were a few people who inspired me to do the book, and Maria was one of them, and I think everybody can see why now. I'm just going to make a couple of comments, and then Ken, you have a question. What Maria hasn't told you is that she is also a mother of two daughters. One is 24, and the other is?
23, 22, and Nico, who's 19.
The baby. And I think she still looks like she's 24. So just to know that there are people, Maria, and there are people like her who manage to do these incredible impact on the world and try to improve the quality of life for others, and they're able to balance that with raising children and having families. I am in awe of Maria and people like her and people like many of you sitting in this room who will be visionaries just like Maria is. But so I'm just so grateful. Thank you for being here. Kenny, come on and ask your question, and then everybody. Okay. You stay.
You've done an incredible job tonight, and you've done an incredible job in life. And I know you've covered it, but just the reason, the genesis of our program here was because we wanted to give students who were 20 years old the sense that there was a life, a successful life they can lead in public service. And here they are, they're sitting here and saying, here's this big internationally successful woman, and I'm only poor little me. So take us back again, I know you covered it, take us back again to you, why you came to Cornell, who you were in life, and did you even think that this was possible? And I know that, you know, the sadness and deprivation which caused you to do those things, but give the genesis of how you started on this whole path for students who are here who say, maybe I could do the same thing. Because that's really the idea of what why we wanted to start this program, to have more people like you that you come in contact with and say, I can do that too someday.
And I really started with nothing but a dream, and that's why we hold onto it so much. My dad, we lived in Kansas. When I was from 12 to 16. And so when we went back, things that were normal, like war and poverty, were not normal anymore after living here in the US. And my dad started a clinic and was looking at all the refugees coming from this, from the rural areas, my mom working with them. My brother is a Jesuit priest, and all the Jesuits were killed during the war. But for me, I realized that my dad was getting the same patients over and over and over again. And it was because they had no income, no way to change their life. So I was studying actually pre-med school, and then I said, no, I got to get into agriculture thinking economic development is going to be it. And so I come to Cornell, and I'm really thankful to Elson, because I was really struggling with all these things in my mind of why do I get all these opportunities, and I feel so guilty, and all these things happening. And so when I went back, so I got my master's, and I went back and said organic farming. But really, I think for me.
Oh, wait, stop. So you're taking your master's. What was your master's in? And did you make a connection there to something that could be a life event?
Yeah, I think, yeah, for me, it was because I said my country is basically agricultural. So if we get really people to improve on their economics, it's going to make a difference. And that's why I came to Cornell, was more into integrated pest management and got into vegetable production. And so I was thinking, yeah, the way to my country is agriculture, and that's the way we're going to be out of it. And so I went back and I started doing that. But really, I think for me, what was key is I had this dream, I had this idea, but it was really listening to people, what they needed, and how they thought this idea would come to life. So the minute they'd say, if you can sell what we have, I'm like, you know, like now I say I'm merchant with pride, but really, it was listening to them and saying, you know, guys, I don't have much money. I'm an organic farmer. I was pregnant at this time. It was hard to get to the villages. And I told them, you know, we're going to work together, but we're going to find a way together. I don't know what it is. And the village people had, you know, certain knowledge. I had others, and we combined it. And I think for us, it's really dreaming together and working together and finding a way together with these people. But I had no money. I mean, organic agriculture in Guatemala was not very We were our own, you know, extension agent, certification, importers of everything. There was nothing supporting us, so it was very tough. But we started with plants and with trees and harvesting seeds. We started with what we had, and the environment gave us what we had. And, you know, after working 4 or 5 years as a volunteer in these guys and stuff, came an NGO from the Netherlands and said, gosh, in Guatemala, you know, because we were seen as private sector, you know, your private sector working with villages, creating the economic development that should be an NGO kind of work. And they, when they came to me and said, Maria, we're going to support your work, write a grant. And I'm like, you know, writing a grant for like $30,000. And I said, that's all? No, write it for $100,000. I'm like, what? Somebody's going to give me money to support my dreams? But really, it was 6 years of working with the village and roads open. And I think when you're a student and you don't see a clear picture, I had for sure no business model or I would have never done this. But I think that the thing is, you know, take a step. And once you take a step, you can see more and take another step and start small. And I don't know, it depends on personalities. Now my business partners, they don't move if we don't have a strategic plan. But I say, I jump into the river and then I see how I swim. So it's that combination of people. But yeah, I think it's just believing in what you want. And if Cornell taught me something, was to pursue the dreams. That's what we're here for. And it doesn't, and you know, at the beginning, it's kind of obscure and abstract. And then it starts taking shape. But the only one that can bring it to life is each one of us. So I really started with nothing, just sharing with people the talents that we all had. I don't know if that.
I understand the focus on women, but I wonder how this success transforms the lives of the men in those villages.
So yeah. Everybody, when I make the presentations, is where are the men? Well, the men, usually they're farming, but Guatemala is one of the places where climate change affects it the most. We're very vulnerable. So now what we're seeing is the men at the beginning will say, oh, this is women's stuff, raise it, you know, that's silly. But when they see that the women are starting to make money than they are, first they feel thankful for it because they say, we are not living just off agriculture. And then they start working with them. And actually the business leaders that we have that are most successful is the ones whose men are helping them. For example, Doña Maria, she didn't go to school, but her husband's a school teacher. So he's bringing in all the back office and all the stuff. In Doña Santa's community, now it's a men leader that is leading the group of women. So I think men are starting to have more and more a bigger role. And what we love is that by working with the women, the power structure in the home starts being more even. And we thought maybe it's going to increase domestic violence. And the women are saying, no, not that we have money. Our husbands are valuing us, our children are valuing us, and really domestic violence has decreased. So more and more. And we want to start getting into agriculture and really getting together with the men. But in this first part of the story, they were not part of the story. But now I think it's because we really want to bring families together, and that's what the women are saying. Yeah.
Was there any pushback from men in the beginning because of you were mentioning the gender inequalities at the beginning of the talk? So was there any kind of women focused?
And I would say it's the pushback comes from two levels. First, the husbands, when we tell the women, you know, come to this training and you have to go to the city and to other villages to see other women, the women will say, my husband won't let me. Really, it's very machista community. The women are supposed to stay in the kitchen, stay in the home. So just making that happen at the beginning is very hard. But the husbands, once the women start bringing income, everything changes. But what challenges this as well is the local authorities that whose wives are not part of the project and say they see this group of women really getting more strong. That's why with the Wakami Village Program, we really want to bring in other programs. But I mean, some women literally had to take them out of the village and grow in a more, in an environment that won't be hostile, because the belief is you're a woman, you can't have a business. And there's a lot of confusion sometimes with associations, you know, where. So we say, no, this is a business. It's not like, you know, today's mine and tomorrow's yours. So it is a little bit hard, but we're trying to work it with it. And all the time that there's power changes, it's tough. But the women are brave, and they will stand up to their authorities. Doña Maria, because she comes from this community where everything was done so collectively, she'll stand up to say, you guys are used to projects, and you take, you know, you live off the projects and see what happens. Those projects are all gone, nothing left. I took this project and see how it's grown. And so it's women starting to stand up. But we really never say, you know, gender equality or anything. Just the women, as they become strong, they start having a bigger voice. And they start being heard. Yes.
What are some of the biggest challenges the Wakami project faces right now?
It depends, I think, on the times. Initially, it was to be able to organize production in such faraway communities to where the quality and the quantities and everything was, and that we could fulfill big orders. That part is done now. I think the biggest challenge now is branding and finding new market ways. We started with exclusive importers in regions and are finding that that was a good model to start, but now we really need more distributors in the different countries. And the branding has become a challenge, but it's, I think, one thing at a time. So to really create this brand awareness and how could you communicate this story in a very simple message that people can connect to. And it was access to capital sometimes can be hard, but we've gone managed through impact investors and angel investors, besides family, friends, and husbands that say, okay, you know, you gotta go out there. But it's been, so those are some of the challenges. Just like any business, I think. Wakami is a Mayan word and means it already is. So for us, this world is already ideal. We just have to find the gate into it.
I wanted to thank you for sharing all of your story with us. It's very interesting. What do you see as some of the challenges for fair trade in a country like Guatemala? I know that your model is very different from your sort of average run-of-the-mill fair trade organization. It's kind of cutting edge, I think. And what do you see as some of the challenges for
I think for us, you know, we're certified fair trade. We're also certified B Corporation. And we really like the B Corporation certificate much more because it's a triple bottom line. And it's, I think it's more advanced. I think fair trade was very important that, you know, making transparent the costs and everything along the value chain. But sometimes when you fill out the certification, we get upset with the kind of questions because it's like, how do we make sure you're not doing this wrong or you're exploiting? You know, it's kind of very different than the whole idea of shared value and triple bottom line. So I think for fair trade, it falls short on the magic that is happening now with social entrepreneurs and social brands. I think it has to evolve a little bit more. And it feels more sometimes fair trade like it's, you know, some countries guaranteeing that others don't do bad things, whereas in a shared value, or I think it's different. We really, you know, we are certified fair trade. We sell a lot in fair trade markets, but we think it has to evolve a little bit. That's my perception.
Hi, my name is Gemma, and I'm actually doing my master's research in Guatemala. And I study great biodiversity, conservation, and agroecosystems in near Cobán and Alta Delicas. But I'm also working with local communities to determine what are the economic trade-offs of certain agricultural systems, as well as those ecological trade-offs. And I basically wanted to just make that connection between you and I, but also I was going to ask your advice. I am going to go back to Guatemala this winter to potentially start a fruit tree project with an NGO, Community Forest Conservation. And I was just wondering what advice you might have for working with local communities as an outsider, not somebody who is from Guatemala, who can't speak Quechua, and what advice you might have for helping to implement a fruit tree project and have it hold. This is an aggregate system that we've determined is the most helpful for people and for bird habitat. So what kind of advice might you have for working with?
I think it's what we learned in the Sakala project, that it's very, you know, we go and we think, you know, this is the way we have to do things, or we work with the villages. I think the first advice would be asking the people what they want. And for us, so we do our workshop in the inclusive business methodology, you know, asking people what are your dreams and what are your fears that paralyze you. And once you acknowledge those, women and people will be ready to move forward. So in a country that is so hurt like Guatemala, where there's so much distrust, unless you make that connection first, and also showing them other successful projects. So they say, you know, if we can see it, we can believe it. So those are the things that I would say.
Maybe another one question or so, because we're kind of at the hour. Another question in the back. Ms. Kim.
Yes, I'm interested in the role that design plays. Because I'm a designer, so design by Excel, how do you, what kind of design process do you use to ensure that you're making something like that?
For us, design is the heart of the system that we do, because our designers, they're Guatemalan women that we got them as students, and they go to the world and see what the fashion trends are and look at communities and see what their abilities are. So design really brings in the community skills and the global market and mix it into one product that will have a market. And that's one of the lessons we learned. Selling just handcrafts from Guatemala is tough. But design, really, with design, you can be so creative. And design is the heart of what we do. It's the one that really connects the rural world with the global market. So it's at the heart of it. Designers are the most precious people in our business because they have the nicest job and the most important.
Well, thank you so much, Maria. It's been just a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe.